This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a retired civil administrator appointed to head the disarmament committee says he will need the support of everyone to be able to succeed.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzaka reporting from the Cameroon capital Yaoundé on a new disarmament committee. Details coming up.
Also, in coordination with the UN, Libyan authorities evacuated 133 refugees from Libya to Niger today, and non-governmental organizations in Malawi are protesting a bill that seeks to regulate them.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, in coordination with Libyan authorities, evacuated 133 refugees from Libya to Niger today after hosting them at the new gathering and departure facility in Tripoli. The facility opened earlier this week. The so-called GDF facility is the first in Libya and is intended to bring vulnerable refugees to a safe environment while the best solutions are sought for them. Most of the evacuees sent home were women and children who had been detained in camps throughout Libya. In another major development, the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known by the acronym MSF, said it is abandoning Mediterranean sea rescues by its ship Aquarius. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following both stories and spoke with me first about the return of migrants to their home country.
We've heard of refugees and migrants being sent back or voluntarily asked to go back to their home countries from Libya. But for the first time, the UNHCR, the refugee agency, in coordination with Libyan authorities, has evacuated 130 refugees after hosting them at one of their facilities in Tripoli, which opened just this week on Tuesday. And this is called a gathering and departure facility. The idea here is to create some location where women, men and children can be gathered instead of the terrible detention centres that we've heard about in Libya, and promoting them to return to their own countries.
So these refugees are from Niger and they're heading back home.
That's right. They're heading home. They've come from five different detention centres across Libya, including some that are more than 100 miles from the capital. And they've been sheltered in this UN facility until their evacuation could be carried out. And this is a breakthrough, really, because the UN has for a long time been concerned about the conditions in Libya, the violence, the torture, and in some cases even the rape of migrants and refugees. And so this centre is designed to bring vulnerable refugees to a safe environment while solutions can be found for their resettlement and their reunification with their families.
In another matter on refugees and migrants, the decision by Doctors Without Borders to abandon Mediterranean Sea rescues, what is the reaction to this and why have they decided to stop this?
Well, we've seen a mixed reaction, and it is remarkable news that Doctors Without Borders, MSF, has decided to end its migrant rescue operations. It really does give you an indication of just how strong the political backlash has been, constantly constraining their activities in the last few months, particularly the Italian government. MSF said that countries led by Italy, European countries led by Italy, had failed to provide enough rescue capacity of their own, and beyond that, had actively sabotaged the efforts of organisations like MSF to carry out their own search and rescue operations. Now, the Aquarius has saved thousands of migrants, an estimated 30,000 who have made that dangerous crossing across the Mediterranean to Europe from Libya and elsewhere, but has faced this campaign of opposition, particularly from the Interior Minister here in Italy, Matteo Salvini. And he welcomed this move by MSF. He tweeted, "Fewer departures, fewer landings, fewer deaths. That's good." So there's one reaction. But we also saw a strong reaction from Amnesty today saying it was very concerned about the policies of the European countries who have failed to do enough, in its view, to save migrants and refugees. And it questioned the numbers of deaths that were occurring at sea and suggested that this might increase in the future because this route has indeed been closed off.
So then, do people really think that this will reduce the number of people trying to cross the Mediterranean?
Well, there's no doubt the Italian government, at least, has been adamant about closing its ports. Since this coalition government took office in June, we've seen a very strong campaign by this government to keep out illegal migrants and refugees seeking asylum. When Mr. Salvini took office, he pledged to close Italy's ports, and he accused charities of running rescue ships, saying that they were collaborating with people traffickers operating out of Libya. Now, we've seen the numbers decrease dramatically in Italy, 23,000 arrivals so far in 2018 compared to 117,000 last year. So it would appear that the numbers have been cut, and certainly the ships have disappeared, the rescue ships have disappeared because of these hardline policies from Italy and other European countries.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
Cameroon says it has created a committee to disarm and reintegrate hundreds of separatist fighters and Boko Haram terrorists who have put down their weapons. But analysts say the committee has a long task ahead in the country's English-speaking regions, where fighting between the government and separatists has intensified. Mokidwin Kenzeka reports from the capital, Yaoundé.
They born Laurentia. Laurentia Jumbam, their house. The bones of Nora, their small house where they for corner road.
Ngoran Nora reads off the names of 30 people whose homes were set on fire before she escaped from the northwest town of Kumbu on Thursday. She tells her community members in Yaoundé that at least 15 people were killed in the villages of Milouf, Kikaikom, Mva, and Tooi by the military in 2 days after gunmen engaged them in battle. She says soldiers might have targeted people they suspected collaborate with the separatists or did not inform them about the fighters' presence in the villages. The violence comes less than a week after President Paul Biya created a National Committee for the Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration of former Boko Haram fighters in the far north and former separatist fighters in northwest and southwest regions. The government said the committee was created to assist hundreds of former fighters who heeded Biya's call to drop their guns and be pardoned or be killed by the military. Joseph Motaze, political analyst with the Cameroon-based Center for the Rehabilitation of Former Fighters, says the committee is a good first step, but he says he believes Biya should reduce the military's presence in the northwest and southwest regions to show he is ready to make peace.
Il est question pour nous de négocier la médiation. Si nous prenons seulement l'option.
Motaze says it is imperative for the government of Cameroon to start negotiating with armed groups in the restive English-speaking regions and immediately drop the idea of using war as a solution to the crisis. He says the fighters are becoming very violent to a point they are kidnapping and killing people who do not share their views and taking administrators hostage to make the area totally ungovernable. The armed groups want to form an independent English-speaking state. The majority of Cameroon's population speaks French. Francis Fayengo, a retired civil administrator appointed to head the disarmament committee, says he will need the support of everyone to be able to succeed. Yango says he has to go to work immediately because the task ahead of him is enormous. He says he is calling on all Cameroonians to propose ideas and to contribute to the peace initiative so that all of the youth who have taken up weapons against their country make wise decisions to come back home from the bushes
and live like peaceful citizens in their own country, Cameroon. The separatist war has killed more than 1,200 people, according to the government. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The UN Refugee Agency, in coordination with Libyan authorities, evacuated 133 refugees from Libya to Niger today. And Cameroon says it has created a committee to disarm and reintegrate hundreds of separatist fighters and Boko Haram terrorists. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In wrapping up his 12-day mission to East Africa, the top United States diplomat to the continent stressed the evolving and varied aspects of Washington's relationships with African states. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
Tibor P. Nagy is the U.S. Department of State's Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of African Affairs. He told journalists that the U.S. relationship with Eritrea is continuing to improve. He declined, however, to detail his discussions with Eritrean leaders or say whether he brought up the country's poor human rights record during their meetings.
Hopefully to get to the point where our relations with Eritrea are just as warm and cordial as our relations with Ethiopia, because both countries are vitally important. In many respects, they complement each other. We talked about a number of issues of mutual interest, including the possibility of U.S. companies investing in Eritrea, because we all recognize that Eritrea needs urgently to create jobs for its many young people.
Nagy added that East Africa continues to stabilize.
On the Horn of Africa, we are very encouraged by recent developments with Prime Minister Abiy in Ethiopia extending a hand of friendship towards Eritrea, which is washing over the entire region. Hopefully it will also impact South Sudan, and hopefully soon the relationship also will be normalized between Djibouti and Eritrea. I think it is also impacting Somalia.
During his telephone news briefing Thursday, Nagy said it is U.S. policy to combine military aid to the Somali government as it fights al-Shabaab with development assistance that will make a difference for Somalis.
You can confront the combatants, you can get rid of the combatants, but then the question is then what? What fills the vacuum? Because if you simply get rid of the bad guys, if you don't then provide government services, you don't provide protection to the people, then unfortunately a new group of bad guys will rise up, which is what has happened in Somalia before. We want to make sure that that does not happen this time.
There are no free trade agreements between the U.S. and any sub-Saharan African nation. Putting one in place was an important topic during this year's annual high-level dialogue between the U.S. and the African Union. Nagy says some bright spots for development are already in place. He touts the U.S. Build Act of 2018, signed by President Trump in October. It doubles the investable assets of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation to $60 billion.
And as I have told a number of African leaders, I will be delighted to push U.S. investors towards Africa. I need their help in pulling them by establishing an environment which is friendly to investors and what we call a level playing field, so American businesses can have the same chance as businesses from other places.
Still, Nagy cautions that there are areas of deep concern, especially in Cameroon, where friction between the Francophone majority and the Anglophone minority continues to heat up. He fears that Anglophones may become dangerously radicalized.
If you recall, in Nigeria a number of years ago, Boko Haram was a relatively minor organization involved in Islamic education, and it was largely through the brutal reaction of the Nigerian government at the time, which turned Boko Haram into a much more radical organization and actually increased Boko Haram's membership. the last thing we need is for the radicals in Anglophone Cameroon to just add to their numbers because of the overreaction of the Cameroonian security forces.
Naj counsels compromise. He lauds efforts by some Cameroon lawmakers to write a constitution that decentralizes political power and provides local control in the northwest and southwest provinces where most Anglophones live. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, in Malawi are protesting a bill that, among other things, seeks to establish a new regulatory authority for such organizations. The NGO Act Amendment Bill has also imposed heavy fines for NGOs that will breach the law. It has also imposed a prison sentence on directors of the NGOs flouting the laws. But the NGOs say the bill is an attempt to close down the human rights NGOs, allegations which the supporters of the bill deny. The NGOs have now served Parliament with an injunction restraining it from debating on the bill until it is reviewed, but Parliament refuses to back down. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Proposers of the draft legislation says it largely seeks to amend the Non-Governmental Organizations Act so that it complies with the constitutional standards. Currently, non-governmental organizations elect members to a board that regulates NGO operations. Under the new law, the board would be replaced by an NGO authority whose members would be appointed by a cabinet minister. Charles Kajulweka is an executive member of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, a grouping of NGOs protesting the bill. He told VOA the problem is that the bill also empowers the NGO authority to suspend and deregister organizations.
Now imagine you have party sympathizers in that authority. Critical CSOs like ourselves that are standing strong on corruption, challenging the establishment, will be simply deregistered just the very same day you have this bill passed into law.
The bill will raise the penalty imposed on an NGO flouting the law from the current $70 to $20,000. The proposed NGO law also imposes a 7-year jail term on NGO leaders found in a breach of the law. Kajulweka says this is worrisome.
So, for example, if you delay to submit your report to the NGO authority, you could be punished by paying $16 million. Then the director of the organization will have to be sent to prison for 7 years. This is basically a ridiculous provision. It's a provision you can only find in the authoritarian states.
Mavuto Bamus is the advisor to the president on NGOs in the office of the president and cabinet. He told VOA the aim of the amendment bill is to make the NGOs more accountable to people they save.
The way the NGO bill has been framed is to make sure that the villagers derive value from the projects that NGOs claim to do. And we say this fully knowing that there are some so-called civil society leaders who are simply enriching themselves at the back of poor Malawians.
Bamus says the formation of the NGO authority is not to gag NGOs, but simply to do away with the current situation whereby NGOs regulate themselves through the NGO board.
You cannot leave a sector to regulate itself. Be it the private sector, it has got institutions that regulate the actions and behaviors of the private sector. And in the case of civil society, we run the risk of having a civil society that is amassing absolute power contrary to the notions of limited powers under a democratic setup.
However, the NGOs have so far obtained a court injunction restraining Parliament from deliberating on the bill until amendments are made. But First Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Esther Ncheka Chirenje, said in Parliament this week that the National Assembly Powers and Privilege Act does not allow any interruption of business while Parliament is sitting.
Currently, Parliament is sitting. Therefore, such an order may not be served or executed on Parliament. Therefore, Parliament is at liberty to proceed with its business without any interferences. I so rule.
But the NGOs say the National Assembly risks facing contempt of court charges if it ignores the court's injunction on the matter. In January this year, the government also attempted to hike annual fees that NGOs pay to the NGO board from $70 to $1,400. The NGOs are still challenging this with a court injunction. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The city at the epicenter of the DRC's Ebola outbreak has been attacked again by an armed militia, which could further set back efforts to fight the deadly virus. Officials say at least 18 civilians were taken hostage during two attacks late yesterday, and their bodies were found on the outskirts of Beni. More than 20 attacks have occurred since the Ebola outbreak was first reported more than 4 months ago. Typically, residents have followed the attacks with angry protest, forcing aid workers to stay off the streets and disrupting efforts to keep track of people at risk of contracting the disease. Health workers yesterday confirmed a jump of 13 new confirmed cases, one of the highest one-day increases following an attack a week ago. That raised the overall total to 471 confirmed and suspected cases, including 273 fatalities. The World Health Organization predicts it will take at least 6 months to bring the outbreak under control, and there are concerns it could jump to neighboring countries.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Peepstas, welcome to the weekend. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Boy, do I have a show for you. 55 minutes of cool, commercial-free, Pan-African music. Hear your favorite current Afro beats. Discover new music from Ghana and meet Linky Bill from Nairobi. He's just released a new album.
Even if you know a lot of things, there's no guarantee that you're going to see it tomorrow.
Revel in earthy African classics from Mali, Cape Verde, DRC, and South Africa. All this and more this Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Just tune in to your local FM station and meet me there. Music Time in Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.